We should surely like have some sort of like Mickey Mouse imagery on here as well, given that the IP's run out.
We should.
Is the IP run out? Is that just because of copyright laws?
Yeah, because like standard,
in effect, 150 years.
No, I can't remember what the laws are in the US exactly, but in the UK normally you get 50 years, don't you, Kath? Is it 75 standard? But the
I was actually in the British Library the other day, and I happen to know someone that's one of the oldest serving members of the British Library through a friend, and he took me on a tour of the British Library. He worked there 5 years before the first brick was even laid. And we got to know everything to do with the library. He even told me some really great stories anecdotally about the Magna Carta, the King's Library. And we were speaking about IP, and they had in the British Library stored newspapers from the 1870s, and they were OCRing those. And of course, the newspaper companies then said, that's our IP, it's their copyright if someone was searching for it. And they put it out to tender. And apparently he was saying that copyright runs for 150 years.
It depends what the medium is.
I think it depends, doesn't it? Because also, because like things like copyright on music, it runs from the death of the artist, doesn't it? That's why certain of the Beatles songs are still well within copyright, because a lot of the Beatles are still knocking about, whereas other songs are starting to come out of copyright because the artists, if you think about some of the artists from like the 60s who were just massively into drugs, they died in their 30s, and so they're now coming to the end of that period of time of coverage from their estates. But the, on Steamboat Willie, I know that the US Senate extended the copyright period out by two lots of 10 years. So it should have been out of copyright quite a long time ago.
But did you say, Indy, that he was working there 5 years before the first brick was laid?
Yeah, the foundations. So the British Library.
So he's 380 years old.
No, for the institute that is the British Library, so they still had.
Got it. So he was working, just not in that building.
That building was purpose-built. I think it was that they heard that he was saying that the initial budget or something was like, I should remember the number of things, it was only the other day. It was like they'd budgeted like 20 million or something, and it ended up being like 500 million or something ridiculous. It was something ridiculous.
Standard and budgeting variance.
Yeah. Not surprised.
But it's such a beautiful building. I really encourage everyone to go and give the British Library another visit because it's beautiful.
Hello and welcome to the Digitals in a Cruel World podcast, the go-to place for all your accounting tech news in the UK and beyond. I'm your host, Ryan Pearcey, and today, or this episode, we are diving into app news as we always do. We have a great interview with Bogdan from Apron, and we're talking again to Vipul from AdvanceTrack. But I guess before we do any of that, we should hand the mic over to the infamous John Toon to hear a little bit about what he's been up to recently.
Thank you, Ryan. I've had quite a busy day because I've been working from home, and then I've been into Manchester to celebrate the end of fasting, which is close approaching for some of our Muslim colleagues, in anticipation that they'll be taking time off, and it sort of coincides with the Easter period. We've been doing a little bit earlier, so it's been good to see some of them and learn a bit more about the importance of fasting for them and their faith, and also to celebrate breaking the fast this evening with them. So yeah, that was really good. And aside from that, just the same old crazy stuff, right? It's just work at the moment, but it's good. How are your things for you anyway?
Yeah, not bad. I've been busy preparing for what's going to be a really interesting digital accounting show with a great talk from us at the end of the first day, hopefully with some brilliant reveals of what we're planning to do through 2024. So if you are listening, you're going to be at the show, please do come along to our talk 4 p.m. on the 16th. Yeah, do check us out. We're in the schedule. But we're not alone, John and I. We are also joined by the amazing Indy Tatler. So Indy, how are you?
Yeah, I'm really excited today. We've got Bogdan on. So my new favourite person.
I thought he was like your roommate, effectively, isn't he?
He was my roommate when we were at Canary Wharf. Yeah, that's right. I door-stopped him and dropped in just to meet Apron after they raised their series funding.
Get you guys. Like, rooming in Canary Wharf, mate. Unbelievable. How fancy are you two?
We were fancy. They obviously, like, moved in as soon as they'd taken their funding and got themselves a nice little office on the same floor.
And how did your first date go?
It was not the best first date, I won't lie.
Oh dear. I heard on the rumour mill prefers coding over girls. Is that true, do you think, Indy?
Well, I can tell you it was a bit uncomfortable because I decided that I'd go and introduce myself to April. As you do, you're on the same floor. You think, okay, I'll drop in and see my neighbours. And I was introduced to him. I bogged through. He won't mind me sharing it because I'll bring it up on the interview later. But I went in, I was introduced to him, and I kid you not, he stood from his laptop. I must have said to him, hello, I'm Indy. I'm on this floor, bankable, but I also have this accounting tech podcast, which, you know, I know that you're speaking to. And I was about to finish a sentence, say, you know, speaking to some of the people in this sector or area. And I kid you not, he looked at me and he said, I haven't got time for this. Put his headphones back on his head and sat down right in front of me and turned a 90 degree angle away from me.
And did you get good sight of those headphones? Were they noise cancelling ones or were they like the cheap rubbish ones? And you could have just kept talking at him and he would have heard every word.
I have a little bit of shame. I was like, hmm. And there was donuts, John. There were donuts on the way out. I didn't even get a donut.
Do you know what? If I'd been treated like that, I would have taken the donuts with me. I'd be like, fuck you guys.
It was a donut disturb moment. Anyway, we're going to meet him later. So that'll be exciting. Maybe we won't bring that up. But April obviously clearly doing some big things and made a series of new releases. So we'll hear from him.
That's why he doesn't have time to talk to the little people. That's what it is.
That's all right. I'm insignificant. What can I say?
Or maybe he's fully adopted his London roots now and decided that he can't possibly talk to strangers. That must be what it is.
You know, I'm not sure. I think that I quite liked his brash approach. It's something refreshing, isn't it? You know, when someone says, I don't want to talk to you, and they just about turn and look at the other person next to you.
It's something else. Even I'm not that rude.
Oh, I don't know about that. I might try it. I might try it out and just see how it works for me. I'm pretty sure someone is going to insult me for it, but let's see, okay? It might be like Bogdan-style networking. Let's try it out our next few events and see how we do.
Amazing. Okay. Well, I tell you what, we've got a standard account text in a few weeks. Maybe we should try that. When someone comes up to you to ask a question, you're like, sorry, I don't have any time.
I need to take this call. Goodbye. You are the weakest link. Goodbye.
I will kick off app news for this episode and something a little bit different from the FT. They pulled together their FT 1000 ranking, which has looked at compound annual growth in revenue for businesses across Europe between 2019 to 2022. So a little bit out of date now, but they were really interested in how businesses had reacted to the COVID-19 pandemic and obviously business shutdowns and things like that. And what they had identified was there was a minimum average growth rate of 36.9% required to get into the list. And there was absolutely stonking numbers in here in terms of some international European businesses, some of which I'd never heard of, but compound annual growth rates of in excess of 400-500% to get into the top three positions. So really, really impressive. But what was even more impressive was there was one of our favorite accounting tech tools in the list from a UK perspective, which was iPlicit. They were number 19 in terms of the UK rankings, if you separated it out. So yeah, kudos to them. Well done for getting into that and being identified. I think overall, they're about place 103 in the top 1,000. So still pretty good going. And they were only beaten by a business that I've never heard of, which is index.dev in the IT software category. And the only other one that stands out there where they beat iPlicit, was OnlyFans did pick them. They got to number 73 in the list and just squeezed out of the top 10 in the UK rankings. But well done to iPlicit.
Yeah, they've got to be slightly gutted to not be in the top 100, right? Come on, guys, pull your finger out. But no, it's amazing, right? I knew they were going great guns in terms of growth, but yeah, listing that, I think, is pretty amazing.
155% it was. So that is quite good going, isn't it, right?
It is. You've got to be recruiting quite substantially to support that level of growth. So well done. And I've got something also from iPlicit. They have basically landed the company of the year in the National MAT Awards or MAT Awards. So Multi-Academy Trust. And this comes on the back of launching a product in 2023 called iPlicit for Education to service Multi Academy Trust. It's been a year and they're now already named Company of the Year by the National Met Awards, which is just incredibly impressive. And the whole point of this is that they're trying to disrupt that market where you've got quite outdated traditional software, normally server-based. And apart from XFE, which are an amazing product that's based around Xero, there's not really huge competitors. And we know about Xero, great product, but does have its own transaction limits, which can cause issues on, I guess, the bigger mat. So I've seen that opportunity, dived in, and seem to be doing really well. So I know that's on the back of other awards they've won as well over the course of the last year, which was the Best Enterprise Accounting / ERP Software at the Accounting Excellence Awards, and won the FinTech Prize at the Tech Southwest Awards in autumn 2023. So it seems if there's an award, they're going to go and win it. That's what I seem to be experiencing at the moment.
Yeah, kudos to them and the team. They are everywhere, aren't they, at the moment, which is good for them. Clearly, the marketing's working right, and maybe one or two of their competitors have taken the foot off the gas. But as you say, in that academy space in particular, probably iPlicit and XFE are the only really quality options for schools in that arena. And the rest of the providers, I'm afraid to say, are a fairly sorry bunch, which are taking advantage of a sector. But that is the way it goes, unfortunately. Moving on then, Alica Bank have recently announced some integrations and partnerships with both Xero and Sage. They have direct integrations into both of those products for their business current account customers. Basically, that means we've now got bank feeds live for Alica. For anyone that's not aware, Alica is probably one of the fastest growing business banks in the UK. They had 2,000 customers signed up to their business current account in December 2023 and were named as the fastest growing company of 2023 in the Deloitte UK Fast 50. Yeah, they are starting to be seen here, there and everywhere. They're definitely out and about in the events that we're in. And I think they've got quite a compelling offering for that sort of larger S, smaller M part of the SME market, particularly where they are definitely underserved by the high street banks and probably a little bit too big or maybe a little bit too complex for the fintechs and the challenger banks.
They've dipped their toe in the water in the kind of accountancy market from a marketing perspective in the last year or so, but I'm expecting them to be pretty much everywhere throughout 2024. If there's an event, we're probably going to see them there. But that's good. Like, they're doing it something a bit different. They're trying to mix it up. And it's unfortunate that it was fastest growing 2023. They missed out on that list from the FT. Their data is too recent. I know we work on real-time data, but I do wonder if 2022 reporting in 2024 is real-time data for the FT. I don't know if that's as up-to-date as they can get. Anyway, let's mix it up a little bit. I've got an acquisition. So the owners of Coconut have acquired the cloud payroll tool MyPAYE. Now, MyPAYE or MyPAYE has been around for a long time, have been integrated into tools such as QuickBooks Online and Xero, and been handling that payroll, that timesheet functionality, and a bit of expenses as well for a long time. They were probably one of the first non-accounting platforms to integrate in. They were around when I was starting in this realm of cloud accounting. It feels like they've been there forever. But I don't feel they've really progressed much in that period. They've been quite a stable and consistent performer. And I guess if we look at the products that Pennine Ventures, the owners of Coconut, have acquired, they had GoSimple Tax. They acquired Coconut, have integrated that into GoSimple Tax. And now they've acquired MyPAYE, I think, to form an entire suite of products now that all integrate, overlap, and complement each other. So none I'd say are defining. I think they've picked up probably good deals, those that maybe not doing as well, maybe struggling, need a buyer, and they're utilizing the tech to actually build something a lot better from the existing products in the market. So interested to see where that ends up. But yeah, that was one out of left field for me. Didn't expect that to occur.
No, definitely not. But at least the thing you can say about the team at Coconut, they are a lovely bunch.
Oh my God. Dad jokes. We're doing dad jokes now.
moving on to something that I would just like to say that we completely foresaw for once in our lives, because we heard the rumors and we got them out there on the pod and now they've come true, is that Xero have announced payroll changes. And actually, these are some genuinely exciting payroll changes, because sometimes payroll changes are boring. So I think the key one that really stands out to me on this is that Xero have changed the way that you can migrate from a previous system onto Xero Payroll itself by being able to upload your full payment submission from your previous software into Xero And that will facilitate the transition of the records, migrating the data from the old system to the new one. And that, for me, sounds absolutely fabulous, because typically our recommendation for clients, if they are looking to move to zero payroll, is to wait for the tax year end. So it only really gives you one very narrow window to make the change, because you're moving payroll and tax data and stuff from one system to another typically has been fairly manual. It's always been a little bit fraught because it's quite easy to make errors and stuff. I've come up against that before where I've not got the NI information correct and it's screwed up the payroll when you first test it and run it. And that's a delightful place to be. So I'm really pleased to see this. I think anything that makes that transition between products as easy as possible is always appreciated. So this looks really exciting. And as it happens, I do have a potential zero payroll move on the cards fairly soon. So I will definitely be testing this out to see how easy and simple it is over the coming weeks. There are a few other bits and pieces. They have increased the ability to enter more information about employees' contracted working patterns if you're a payroll admin. So this means that if you have like non-traditional hours, say, for example, like 4-day week, which is obviously quite popular for some firms, you can now start to add that in. So it'll make managing and running payroll a little bit easier to do on a day-to-day basis. And there's a little bit more guidance in there around setting up pensions and stuff, because I must admit, in the age of auto-enrollment, it's still somewhat of a challenge sometimes to understand exactly what we're doing with the schemes and who's contributing what, and especially if you're not on the statutory limits or the statutory contributions. So I think anything that helps in terms of making that assessment easier, getting the contribution levels right, making sure that people are opted in or opted out, or if you've got salary sacrifice arrangements, whatever it might be, there can be a wealth of complexity in this world. And Luddites like me come along and stamp their feet all over it and make a mess of it.
They've tinkered with the pension side, I think, quite regularly over the last few years. And I think maybe that highlights that's a key area that people that use zero payroll have struggled with. They need some additional support to make it easier and more streamlined. The ingestion tool, right? That, I think that's great. But I thought that was, when I first saw that, I thought that was pioneering. But I have learned that other cloud-based payroll tools also seem to do this. I know that Employment Hero, formerly KeePay, does it. But I think maybe I'm just so used to the traditional payroll tools where it was very archaic to ingest information from another payroll provider. I think this is great. And it's only going to help people transition to zero payroll.
Maybe this is one of the arguments for MTD for tax, right? Payroll has been digitized as a consequence of various things, RTI, auto-enrollment, etc. And the fact that payroll providers are now enabling the use of this information that's coming out of payroll systems to be used as part of that transition, maybe this is one of the arguments around why MTD might be useful in the future when we get into ITSA and corporation tax, because it might make that transition between softwares a little bit easier in the future.
I've got something that was announced at the Festival of Accounting and Bookkeeping. That was that KPM have released a new time and fees module. Now, this isn't something pioneering. They had a time and fees module, but they've rebuilt it to be more built for the new SaaS way of working. Their product was quite old now. They've been around for a long time, and they've been going through and re-engineering parts of it to make it modernized and make it fit for AI as they start to roll it out. One thing that did stand out to me, which I thought was an interesting comment, is they stated that accounting is moving away from time-based fees towards a more fixed fee model, and this has driven a race to get to the bottom price in certain parts of the industry. It does seem a bit of a weird analogy, considering that a lot of businesses are actually upping their prices and charging more for the advisory aspect. Maybe that's the way that they're pitching to their clients, that their clients are more on the low-cost, efficient turnaround. And that's why they focused their new time and fees module on that. It's on churn rather than high-level advisory. All speculation, but that comment, that quote by Dinavahi, I think that's right, kind of alludes to the fact that's maybe the nature of their clients.
There's been a thread on the accounting web on the announcers about charge out rates and fixed fees versus hourly rates and things. I always struggle a little bit with these discussions or arguments, because the vast majority of firms work on a fixed fee basis for probably the vast majority of their work, and probably the only places where you're still in hourly rates tends to be in places like corporate recovery and corporate finance. R&D claims maybe are on a sort of a contingent basis in some instances, but again, that depends on the structure of your firm and whether you've got any restrictions around that. But surely pricing for our customers is for us to decide. If we want to charge a fixed fee for a job, we charge a fixed fee. If we want to charge an hourly rate, we'll charge an hourly rate. And if we want to, you know, charge some sort of combination of a percentage on something with a cap or whatever it might be, that we could do all of those things. I don't understand the fixation on it's fixed fee or it's hourly rates. No, it's fixed fee or hourly rates or something else or whatever you want to charge. And whether you do timesheets or not doesn't change the concept of how you come up with a cost or a price for a customer.
Now, admittedly, I think that they've aimed their product to be more looking at, if you are doing a fixed fee operation, that when you're allocating time, it's just easier to report against it. Because I guess maybe their traditional system was you clock up time, then you bill it all at the end, rather than, I guess, more a retainer or fixed fee level or traditional way of reporting.
Yeah, fair enough. Well, moving on then to something from Zahara. So they've just announced the ability to add custom fields at a line item levels. For anyone that's not aware, Zahara is an OCR tool, so think along the lines of Dext, AutoEntry, etc. But typically aimed at sort of probably slightly larger, more complex businesses because they have probably a more comprehensive extraction capability. Also plugs into some bigger tools in the market, as well as going backwards into things like Sage 50, etc. Because they've got connectors that enable you to do that, and they've got inbuilt approval processes. So they're adding line item level capability to add custom fields. And that's quite handy because that can be useful when you've got purchase orders flowing through into the system with invoices and you want something specific in there which can be tracked through to an invoice. And also it leaves you the ability to do more things around tracking costs as the invoices are coming into the business and obviously going into your accounting system. And I think it also potentially gives you the ability to reroute approvals as well, potentially in the future, if that's not quite there yet, based on what's going into those custom fields. So I think it just enhances what they've already got. It brings a whole host of extra functionality, particularly if you're running out of things like cost codes or tracking categories or whatever it might be in your system of choice, because you've now got the ability to add an additional field which might enable you to track more. In addition to that, they have a payment solution. Now, this has been rumbling around in the ether for a while because I've been aware of a payment solution for probably at least 3 months, probably much longer than that, actually, probably 6 months or so. But I know that it's sort of been in alpha testing, not really been released out there. But it has now entered sort of public testing capability and they're ready to soft launch it fairly soon. So if you are a Zahara user or you're getting your clients on Zahara, I'd look out for that because payment integration is coming and it'd be really interesting to see what that functionality looks like. I do know who their partner would, but I don't think I'm allowed to say. But it's got some good functionality coming, certainly if they're going to be able to leverage the partner that they've chosen. And of course, potentially streamlines an area that's challenging. And I think particularly for the types of businesses they're looking at, that kind of payment service within the OCR product or within the sort of AP process is probably one that has more of an appeal than maybe some of the smaller businesses have a challenge around in terms of, if it's just the MD, doing all the bank payments and stuff, it's fairly straightforward. But once you get into a business that Zahara will get involved in, you're probably going to have a more enhanced finance function with approval processes and steps and access to banks at different levels, etc. So I think this is where they can really make a difference.
Yeah, I love this release from Zahara. And I think you pretty much summarized that perfectly. And the fact that they're in the slightly larger business space really enhances that functionality and that desire to bring everything back into a single solution, which I do find now talking to the businesses. As they grow, they add more apps and it gets a little bit cumbersome. So bringing it all into one is more important for them. In addition, you've seen, I guess, as we talked about in the last pod, Apron go from payments now to invoice capture. And we're going from Zahara from invoice capture into payments. So everything, as I said at the start of the year, my predictions is consolidating. We're bringing everything into single packages. And we're going to see more of that throughout the year, I believe. But talking about, I guess, a higher level invoice capture tool, back down to one that's perfect for smaller businesses, one that's been around forever, Dext. They have once again released a new bit of functionality, this one in due date extraction from the invoices. You could set rules previously, which you could just say the amount of days after an invoice, put that in as a due date. This time it reads the invoice, finds the due date and brings it in automatically. And you can choose to either have that or override it with your set rules so that flows into the finance system. Just another thing that they've been releasing, and I was on their update the other day, and they've got lots more that they're expecting over the course of 2024, even talking about some big releases in April. So I think we'll be talking about them on the pod over the next year.
I'm ridiculously excited about that update because I think due date extraction was one of the things that was always a little bit painful to deal with, particularly when you're putting it in front of new clients, new customers, and they're like, what do I do with the due dates. Oh, I have to build a rule. Okay, fine. Let's go into that and do that. But yeah, so great little release. And I look forward to seeing how it works and whether it works adequately, because that's the important thing. There's no point in extracting due dates and then nonsense. So that's quite fundamental. Sticking with the whole accounts payable shenanigans, Nook have also released a whole bunch of updates as well. They've built something around their payment runs in terms of, if you have a failed payment run, it will now tell you and notify you why and then how to resolve the issue should that payment run fail. So that's a neat little functionality brought in. They've also brought in the ability for you to change the scheduled date of a payment. So where in the original implementation of the product, you could schedule a payment for, say, a week on Friday. But then if you change your mind and said, oh, it should go a week on Thursday, you then couldn't change that. You had to sort of cancel the payment and then go all the way back through the process, which was a little bit clunky. So that's a nice, neat little update as well. And then around approval rules and stuff, they have now brought in the ability to edit rules. So once you've created a set of rules, you can then go back and edit them, which sounds a little bit weird because you think if you'd set a rule, why wouldn't you be able to go back and edit it? But that was how it had sort of been built and created at the time. So that's now there. And then the final one, and this is a fairly big one, is obviously because Nook is making payments from a pool of money that you've got to update into your wallet, they will flag you a huge, great big warning if you don't have enough funds in your wallet to actually make the payments that you've scheduled. And they'll tell you also not just that you're short, but by how much by, so that you can literally through the banking process do a one-click, you know, fund from your normal bank account and make sure that you're covered. So again, nice, neat little set of updates there, which I think are all just, you're leaning towards making the product even more easy to use. And then the final few bits and pieces, they have a new advisor role in the product, which allows accountants to check the status of the companies they're using Nook for. So you can verify them, you can check that they're effectively up to date and correct. You can also do payroll on the mobile. You can make payroll payments on there. And they also support local Turkish payment rails. So that sounds like a delight, doesn't it, Ryan?
I've been waiting for that forever. Thank you for being able to nail me to run on the Turkish payment rails. But no, what I picked out mostly from that news, John, is that they're going to tell me I'm short. I got bullied on that for years when I was young, and now Nook are doing it as well. So I'm going to be hunting you down, Nook.
Great big warning light.
Yeah, exactly.
You're short, Ryan.
Flashing in my face. Let's wrap this up with something that's been doing the rounds on LinkedIn, and that is the BBC article stating that AI is going to take the grind out of accountancy. And although that is what was stated, actually the focus very much on audit. And this completely contrasts to an article they wrote about 6 or 7 years ago, where they said that AI will replace 80% of accountants and bookkeepers. They're now just saying it's just going to make it easier, make our lives easier. They've changed the spin and made it so that actually all those boring, monotonous tasks are going to be replaced by AI. Some examples they've set of this are summarizing documents, creating content, drafting documentation, advanced searching, analytics, and insight and knowledge management, all of which I think we've probably been tinkering with and playing with since ChatGPT and Copilot was released. The main thing they flag is that this will replace a lot of the work that junior members of the audit team do. And as I was a junior member of an audit team and the monotonous, boring stuff that I had to do, I want to say, yay, that's great. But I'm also concerned about how we're going to develop and educate those individuals that are coming through the audit service lines. And they are stating that the training programs are changing, but considering how long it took for training programs to adapt to cloud accounting technology, I'm not sure how quickly they're going to adapt to training in AI. I don't know if that's something that, John, you are doing in your firm. I know you're very heavily audit focused.
Yeah, I got a few comments around this sort of BBC story. Number one, it feels like it was at least 12 months too late, if not 2 or 3 years too late. It was great promo for Haysmack, though, because they were like the main firm that were featured in it. So well done, Haysmack. Your marketing guys have done an absolute number on them there. Kudos to the fact that Inflow, as a byproduct of being used by Haysmack, and Data Snipper were both referenced, although we beat you to it, BBC. We had the CEO of both of those on before you, so what can you say? But no, I think actually you make a very serious point, and there was a very serious point in the article, which, again, is not necessarily news because the industry has been talking about it for a while, but it's about, you know, not just upskilling the existing workforce, but also about training the new workforce coming through. As we anticipate that AI in its various guises will start to remove some of the monotonous tasks on which we deem it's necessary to cut your teeth on in the accounting and audit space, what are we going to do in terms of upskilling and training people on this? And actually, in one of the talks that I did at FAB, there was a question about if accountants auditors aren't learning like the basics, how are they going to ever understand what an accountant auditor does? And also, how do you then bridge that gap between going from a brand new trainee to trying to get someone to that level of experience, maybe 2 or 3 years in, where they can have a different kind of conversation with someone? My only sort of single answer to that is that I question the need for us to still be learning some of the basic things that we learn at an accounting level. And I contrast this with other areas and other skill sets and stuff that we all have, in terms of, just because our cars are turning electric and stuff doesn't necessarily mean that we understand how the batteries work, doesn't necessarily mean that we're still expecting to turn a key in an ignition, for example, or use a manual box, because none of those cars have them anymore. And we don't lament losing those skills. It's not a problem. We can still drive a car from A to B. And actually, I think what that's the important thing is, just because the technology in a vehicle is changing, we still learn how to drive a car in the same way. And I think we should be considering how we learn to be accountants, how we learn to be auditors and tax advisors and stuff, in a slightly different way, so that the technology that we use doesn't really matter. But what we can do is we could be a much more effective, functional person with all the safety caveats and the managing the risks, etc., around the outside. So that's kind of my take on it. I don't have a silver bullet, but I know that the Institute or the ICAW rather are changing their syllabus from, I think it's 2025. So there will be changes coming into the learning that our trainees go through.
What a perfect analogy to end on, John. You should talk at some events. I think it's a brilliant public speaker.
Thanks for your condescension, Ryan.
We're lucky to have Vipul Sheth from Advanced Track back on. And in this section, we're going to talk a little bit about an area that I think I'm still learning about, which is the difference between outsourcing and offshoring. So, Vipul, can you just enlighten me? What are the differences?
People often get confused by the two. So you're not alone there, Ryan. Outsourcing is where you have a job project and you essentially get somebody else to do it. So it can be something as simple as cleaning your car. Yeah, that's outsourcing, if you like. In our world, it's a set of accounts. It's doing the bookkeeping, doing a tax return. In terms of offshoring, it's where you are doing the work offshore. It's usually referred to as dedicated resourcing. You have a colleague who's assigned to you as a firm, and they work solely for you or predominantly for you. So they're just embedded within your business.
Got it. Not because I guess I was looking at similar to where you've got this fractional term now, haven't you? So you, rather than having an FD, you have a fractional FD. But I guess if it's a pool of resource, then it could be anyone that's delivering that fractional work.
Yes.
Is that right? Brilliant.
Okay. Yeah, very much. Yeah.
And how does that, is there a benefit of, I guess, a business being able to provide both the outsourcing and the offshoring?
Yeah. So what the offshoring does is it's that individual or group of individuals learn your firm's way of doing things. So much like you'd have somebody within your own office. If I go back to my professional days, I worked for 4 different accounting firms. Yeah. They all did accounts and they all did tax. They just recorded them slightly differently. Yeah. So the beauty with that is if you have that same person, they're used to producing files your way. Now, that's great and that works, but sometimes you'd have a peak, yeah, and that resource isn't sufficient. Because we offer both, what firms are able to do is say, actually, Advanced Track, we want 5 people, but there'll be some months where actually we need extra resource or we need all this additional work to be delivered. The beauty is that core team will manage that additional workload, but they've got access to that additional resource, which is part of our outsourced teams. So that, yeah. You've got your core resource that delivers X thousand hours a month. But in addition, you can call upon a wider team because we actually have them.
Flexibility is probably the best term for this, because it's the same thing that cloud enabled, wasn't it? That you could be flexible. And I talked to clients where they've got an internal bookkeeper, and if there's ever an issue, that bookkeeper has to take some leave. With cloud, you've got the flexibility. You can outsource that to someone on a temporary basis and potentially pull that back. And similar way, if you're blending that offshore and outsourcing, you're doing the same. Is there a difference in approach from a tech perspective, or are they pretty much aligned from how you operate for both outsourcing and offshore?
It's pretty much aligned, because for us, what we're trying to do is remove as many friction points as possible And the beauty, as you know, Ryan, with cloud, as long as the process is right, let's say bookkeeping, you've got the OCR solution as a matter of course. The rest will follow. So the data comes in, it arrives into the cloud accounting software, and it follows that process. And once you have that, it should just be, is the person trained, one, how to do the job, but two, do they understand that client business well enough to know that this is a direct cost, this is an overhead? So I think it's those sorts of things that are key to making that be delivered successfully.
Yeah, standardization, right? We talked about it in a prior session with you. Standardization and process is critical to enable that effective delivery. But are you finding that certain services favor offshoring compared to outsourcing, or is it still a bit of a kind of a muddle, a mesh between them?
The core services that are not time sensitive, outsourcing works really well because as long as the process is right, so year-end accounts, for example, they're not overly time sensitive. You follow a process, there's a proper QC process, and we deliver the outputs to the accounting firm, and that works really well. The newer services, if you like, that firms are now delivering, so live bookkeeping, for example, you're learning multiple clients, how they run their businesses, where they expect certain costs to appear. Those are the areas where offshoring perhaps works more successfully. And the reason for that is the individual concerned is able to know, oh, well, it's client X, they post this expense to this code, because they see that day in, day out, week in, week out. So we certainly see a difference from that perspective between that than the other one. But equally, you know, firms who want to use dedicated or staff on the accounts side, those work equally successfully. But it comes down to volume and the way that you embed that colleague into your wider team.
Yeah. So I guess in essence, you can provide what's needed, but there can be trends. Like I could take payroll, an example, right? If you go down the payroll route, time criticality of that, it makes sense to go from like an offshoring rather than an outsourcing perspective. So are you seeing trends in growth of the different areas? Is one growing more quickly than the other at the moment?
Our offshoring business is massive now. It's huge. Right. We started our business 20 odd years ago, and offshoring in the space of a few years has probably grown to pretty similar size to our outsourcing business, because that's what people have demanded. But because we've got an outsource team, what we're able to do is deliver colleagues at speed as well. If a firm came to us today, 10 days, 2 weeks later, we can have a colleague assigned to them. And that works pretty fast. We've already tested them in our outsource team.
You've vetted them.
Yes, and
I think that's the other thing. It's personable. We've gone, if you go back a few years, it was all about tech, and now it's back to being about people. And I think that the whole thing of offshoring feels more personable because you've got that relationship. You've talked about growth from a scale perspective. I assume that like you must be from a UK and I'm one of the biggest in the market. Is that fair?
Yeah, probably is. We've got hundreds of colleagues in India across four locations. Yeah, we're a pretty significant provider. And as I say, certainly in the large firm space, we're probably the largest in that space, across the mid-tier firms.
Yeah, and that'll definitely help with the scale, as you say, especially if businesses want to flip between offshoring and outsourcing and making sure that people have been vetted. You've got that scale to go through that process and make sure it's here to fit.
Yeah.
So once again, thank you for coming on. I think it's been great to chat, and look forward to speaking to you again soon.
Thank you so much, Ryan.
Do you want to know what I got up to the other day? I went to go and look at a house for a friend who's thinking of buying a house in London, a flat basically, and went to look at two, and the second one went to look at. The person who'd been living there previously had built like this shed in the back garden space, for want of a better word, which was weird in every single way. So like you went into the shed and there was basically a double bed that wasn't really a double bed, it was just like a mattress on the floor. And then there was a toilet that appeared to have been plumbed in, but I didn't check if it was working. And then a shower tray with pipework, but nothing else finished around it. And yeah, it felt a little bit like the sort of place that you would take a hostage, basically.
Oh! Oh, that sounds so creepy. I'm so sorry that everyone who's listening to this would think that sounds like you should report the man. I assume it was mad.
It was a bit weird. It was genuinely quite weird. And even the estate agents glossed over it quite quickly. It was like, yeah, the previous tenant built a shed in the back garden, and that was it. So you walk in it. Yeah, okay.
It's a shed, or the worst granny annex ever built, by the sounds of it.
It was definitely a terrible granny annex.
I think you should go there after dark and put the blue light on, see what appears, and then just be like, call the fucking police. Like,
I'm not sure I'll be going back in, Dick. Let's put it that way. Not willingly, anyway. Let's put it that way.
I did look up something. I don't know if you've heard of it, called Unplugged. It is basically what you're describing. They look like fancy sheds. Middle of nowhere, like a field usually. And then you've got like enough that you can like shower, clean yourself and cook something, but it's basic.
This does remind me of a story that I heard from Emma Thompson once.
The famous
actress.
Yeah. Because she obviously lives somewhere that's enormous, and she's got this like shed that's on her property. I think it's a sauna, and she quite often like jaunts off down there in the nude. And one of her neighbours reported that there was a naked man walking around her grounds one day, and it was actually her.
What I love about this story is that the way you introduced it, it was like Emma Thompson was your friend. And then when Eddie and I went, what, like the actress, thinking that's obviously not right. You actually meant like you're on speaking terms of Emma Thompson.
I thought the same as Ryan. I thought, no, it must be Emma Thompson, an accountant that exists that we just don't know about.
That famous accountant that walks around in the nude.
That's what I should do with the bunker. Maybe that is my 2020 thing. Yeah, that I should just make it a project and turn it into a sort of unplugged, come to my place and then I send you to the bunker.
Isn't a bunker by definition unplugged? The whole purpose of a bunker is to be able to survive a nuclear holocaust or a bombing without the need for power and your own self-sufficiency. So you've already got it in there, surely, unless you've pitulated and got running water and electricity and stuff in there.
Or Indy put a desk in there and it's now an Ibis hotel.
We'll be charging £60 a night for it. And breakfast is not included. It is extra. That's
more than £60 as well.
You could even have an air raid siren that goes off just to really make it authentic.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's to notify checkout time.
Yeah. It's your wake-up call.
Get out of my house.
When you have to leave the bunker, do you have to sort of, you know, like in that last final scene of Blackadder, you have to climb up a ladder and face the hail of bullets.
Yeah, that's also me, to say, get up.
Yeah, that's it.
Toilet paper is not included.
As long as you're not doing an Emma Thompson at the time, Indy.
Hopefully I'm not mistaken for a fella, but...
Who knows?
Who knows? Who cares? I don't mind. It's fine.
Hey, look, if it's anything like the images that we got done, if I'm mistaken for a woman, it's that woman. I'm taking it.
Today we're joined by Bogdan, who is the CEO of Apron. Apron, if you haven't heard of it, where have you been, has just released its latest product, Apron Capture in beta. And we're also looking to speak to Bogdan about some of the releases, part of his journey since securing his Series A last September in 2023, which was an eye-watering 14.2 million, was that right, Bogdan?
12 million pound in dollars, I guess that's 15.
Oh, I was tracking the euros. Gosh, 14.2 million euros. And it's a pleasure to have you on because we have wanted to have you on for such a long time. As you recall, Bogdan, from our very first encounter, which was probably the most unique introduction I've ever experienced in my life.
I knew you'll bring this up.
Because I love you so much and I'm so glad you're joining us. I will happily say that I'm glad that we've managed to turn that around because I thought to myself, my God, Bogdan hates me. And I didn't even know that was possible.
I'm very glad to be here. Thanks for having me.
So we met in your office and that was at least on a day that you were very fully engaged with what you were working on. And what I learned from you then on just one interaction, one meeting, is that you seem very intense with your pace and how you want to run the business. And that transmits, I think, in a lot of the content that we've read since Apron has launched. You've been quite bold in your statements in saying, actually, good businesses aren't facing the fintech winter. And I think that's probably been represented by the fact that Apron seems to have gone through multiple releases in such a short space of time. So maybe you could talk to us again a little bit about the journey that you've taken so far and how's it going at Apron at the moment. And then we'll dip back into some of the past as well here. But yeah, kick us off. Tell us a bit about Apron.
Yeah, definitely. So we started Apron a little over 2 years ago, and we started as a payments app. We wanted to build consumer-grade payments experience for SMBs. And we started looking into both AR and AP, and then we focused on AP for reasons we can discuss. And yeah, today we're end-to-end AP platform. So we've added a lot of new products and features, and we can chat about that. So it's not payments anymore. We also process documents. We manage, allow people to manage expenses. We've built a truly collaborative tool for accountants, bookkeepers, and their businesses, their clients to interact in.
And that day when I met you, it looked like you were fully coding, like you were in your focus mode. Is that something that you do as part of like your remit as CEO?
I can code. I don't code at Apron. I'm not great at this. But yeah, product design work, product work is no different from coding. It's almost like another engineering domain.
And I think that from everything that we've seen with Apron's swathe of releases at the moment, what's been the major reason for you to shift and only work on the accounts payable side?
The initial hunch for the business was to build a Cash App for businesses. I don't know if you heard about Cash App, but it's this P2P payments app in the US. It's huge. People love it. Venmo is another alternative. And then the initial hunch was let's build a P2P payments app for businesses. But then we very quickly realized that it doesn't work like that in businesses. If you're a consumer, there is money in, money out. If you're a business, you're either skewed towards money out, let's say you're a restaurant paying your suppliers mostly, or you're skewed towards money in. Let's say you're a wine producer and you're just selling stuff to those bars and restaurants. And then we looked at both AR side, AP side, and AP was just much more broken and much more difficult to fix. And that was a signal for us. If it's hard to solve, that means we can build a good business if we solve this. So that's why we decided to focus on AP.
Cool. And you built the payments engine first, didn't you, Bogdan? And then you've gone into invoice capture, which is relatively, well, it's only not even a month old. It's that new.
A couple of weeks. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. It's brand new. And from what I've seen across the internet, it's gone down really well. People have been really excited about that. But have you got an end goal? Are you wanting to dominate the entire of the, I guess, the AP place? Like you're going detailed approvals? Is it the whole of the accounts payable? Is that what Apron will become?
Yeah, that's the idea. We want to build a one-stop shop AP for SMBs, right? So we keep clear focus on small businesses. This is what we like. This is who we want to cater for, and we define SMBs as anyone from one employee, let's say, to 100. And for those guys across Europe, we want to build a one-stop shop. And we pretty much have everything today. So we've got document processing, a very sophisticated payments part of the product, and workflows for both accountants, bookkeepers. Businesses can use it on their own. And one thing missing is Apron card, an expense card. And it's coming soon as well. So we'll see if we can get our hands on it later this year, if not earlier next year. You'll see a nicely designed yellow, juicy yellow Apron card.
We like yellow. That's aligned with our brand. So we're okay with that. Nice. Yeah. The approach to kind of building when it comes to Apron. So is it all developed by yourselves, by Apron? So for example, that card that you were talking about, is that something that Apron then has built directly? How does that work?
So we build everything in-house as much as possible. And the reason for that is because if you don't control your technology stack, the constraints from other vendors will propagate into user experience in the end. So let's say if we were not controlling payments, if we were to get payments from another like payment processor, they would have so many restrictions on who they can onboard, transaction limits, and how batch payments work, where people can send money, and all of those restrictions would have to go into our products and would have to face customers. So that's why we always build as much as possible in-house. And again, reason is unless you control it end-to-end, we'll not be able to build great experiences for customers. And great experience for customers is like everything for us at Apron, and we can chat more about that. And not everything you can build right away. So when it comes to card, for example, we will not build direct integrations with Visas and MasterCard. We will work with the issuing processor, but the rest will build in inside.
Nice.
Cool. And I guess on that, you seem to be heading from obviously payments to invoices to card. And then you've got others in the market that have gone like card to invoices that are heading towards payments. Mm-hmm. So who do you benchmark yourself against? And I know everyone always comes and they go, we don't look at our competitors, we don't look around, but you get a feel of what others do in the marketplace. So who are you benchmarking yourself against the most? Or is there multiple people you do that with?
Yeah, there are a lot of card players who go into bill payments as well and doc processing and OCR. But I don't think anyone was able to crack it yet, especially when talking about SMBs. All of the card players, if you lead with card, you have to work with mid-market to begin with, because small businesses don't have enough volumes and don't have enough need for the card. And when you're in bill pay, it's also super critical to make sure your product works for accountants and bookkeepers. And again, we don't see that too much with the European card players. Yeah, in that sense, like focus on SMBs and focus on the whole AP, not just card issuing. I think that's pretty unique in Europe. In the US, there are companies like that, and in Asia too. A good example from the US is Bill.com, Melio is another one. There's Ramp as well. Ramp is still very much card focused, but I know that one of their key KPIs now is to expand non-card transactions. Again, the way to do this is you have to be really good at understanding accountants and bookkeepers and make sure your workflows work for accountants and bookkeepers. Yeah, but again, Bill.com, Melio, yeah, those are pretty good benchmarks. We don't see much happening in Europe of similar products.
No, and those two are ones that have started to dominate that market. So I can understand why you're not necessarily aspiring, but looking at those as what can we do and make it unique to the UK and Europe. I guess there are others that have tried to do something similar. Dex tried to release a card at one point. That didn't really work. I haven't got into payments. That. Yeah, they did. It was a long time ago now. They partnered with one. And it didn't really take off. But there's others in that, like Pleo are doing it from the card way, and it's arguable whether they managed to penetrate enough. But it's interesting your approach on this. The bit I guess I'd like to understand is that everyone, especially in Europe, is talking about where invoicing is going towards the e-invoicing, you know, linking systems together. And is that something you've got your eye on? Are you keeping that in the back of your mind? Are you considering that on how you build the platform that will link into e-invoicing?
We'll look at it at the background. There's nothing active happening right now, but we do have some conversations with some other large firms in the space. The transition, when it happens, and it will happen undoubtedly, will be a slow one. So there will be plenty of time to start taking action. Yeah, for now, it's pretty early days, I think, in Europe, except for some countries. In Italy, for example, they have implemented this on the regulatory level, and it works super well. So we'll definitely watch this space, but nothing active going on our end at the moment.
Cool. I think on the invoicing, I think, yeah, it'll be slow to take off, but when it hits, that it'll be quick. Like it'll be, unlike Making Tax Digital, which is quick announcement and then nothing happens. It'll be like, drag it out. Yeah. And then when it does, okay, you have to turn this around quickly. Yeah, I think it's a good place to just keep your eye on. One thing, and this may be controversial, I don't know, but it'd be really good to get your take on it, is that James Ashford recently said about the fact that, or made a big announcement about how when he launched GoProposal, he'd already drawn out some of the products that he was hoping to sell to. So he'd already planned to sell before he even created the product. Have you gone, I guess, in creating Apron, had that view, or is your view world domination? Because there's generally one or the other in kind of how you attack this. Have you got a preference on the route you're going down?
Definitely, yeah. We definitely don't call it world domination, but we want to build a public company, and we want to continue innovating and building great products for people. We want to get to millions of subscribers, yada, yada, yada. So we're definitely on that route.
Noticing the trend that you're following there with payments, invoice capture, moving to card. Now, that to me just sounds like a bank in the making. And I am always curious with fintechs in this space who are capitalizing on embedded payments, because then they are one or two steps away from embedded lending. And obviously, this is a space I work in. And so I'm curious about it from that perspective. But I am, when you're discussing it in this way, have you got a vision for being the replacement bank, or being able to extend then lending and credit through Apron?
Yeah, it's a great point. It's a great question. We don't see ourselves launching a current account and definitely not offering lending credit products, because it's just a very different business compared to payments. So it's almost, if a payments company wants to launch credit, essentially what they need to do is to build another company sitting right next to it, right next to the core payments business. And we think there are a lot of business bank accounts. We don't think it's a problem enough for us to go and fix it. There are a lot of companies out there tackling this. So I think we'll continue focusing on payments and moving money. And banks do that too, obviously, but banks' core business is lending and keeping money safe. So deposits and credit. And our core business will be payments, I think. But we keep very open mind.
Now, I only asked that because your background is Revolut. So that was why I wanted to ask that, because obviously you were the ex-product lead at Revolut. And that's why I thought, are we just seeing a return to what is a much stickier version of a tech company, fintech company, that is tackling it through solving a core business problem, which is the accounts payable and everything to do with payments, having a workflow, having SMEs engaged in that workflow, and then building something in that would then at least allow them to solve their whole problem, like the Geoffrey Moore crossing the chasm, a whole problem approach to what you're doing in payments. That's what it sounds like from the outside. So it's just good to be able to understand where you're going with it and where you want to end up.
Yeah, totally. We definitely take a lot of learnings from Revolut. And one is Nick, the founder of Revolut, his formula was always, let's build it 10x better, 10x cheaper. So this is definitely how we approach things too. If you look at our capture product, we can discuss it, but that's exactly how we think about it. And another thing, like another kind of angle where we're very similar to Revolut, is instead of building a mono product and then optimizing the financials of it and dancing around it, kind of we built a suite of products. And instead of increasing our margins through kind of price hikes and stuff like that, we instead increase our LTVs and revenues from customers that we already have. So if you look at Revolut today, all the early Revolut customers only had an FX card. That's it. That was one product. And now is this full financial super app. If you take an average client of Revolut, some revenues come from investment products, some revenues come from daily banking, some from FX, et cetera, et cetera. So we think about it in a very similar way. And we think the AP as a domain, AP as a product, and AP as customer need can sustain that approach. And we already see it working. So we'll continue moving in that direction.
And obviously you had this journey at Revolut, and then you went into Cash App for not that long a time. Was there a spirit, I don't know, trigger point where you were there and you went, I've had that light bulb moment, and this is what I want to build, and this is where I want to do it?
Yeah, there was no light bulb moment. It was just building up slowly. And I don't know if you know, but Square have these two business lines. There is Cash App, retail arm, and then there is Seller, card acceptance terminals for SMBs. And I was part of Cash App, and I was bringing Cash App into Europe, and then Seller team were doing the same. And we were working very closely together, and we were absorbing each other's products and how we think about payments and customer experience. And there was a huge gap, and I was shocked by how they thought about, they also had their P2P payments, it's invoice capture. And we had our P2P payments, which is just sending money for a pizza. And there was a huge gap. Like we were like building an insanely great experience for consumers. And it was just a delight to use Cash App and send money to each other. And at Seller, it was very different. The invoice payment part, Seller solves card acceptance really well. The invoice payment part was far behind. So I started looking into it. And then at some point, yeah, also things got like, frankly, quite political at Square. I couldn't run as fast as I could with my work, with product. So I decided to leave and look into it deeper, into the problem of business payments. And that's how it all started.
Ah, cool. So it wasn't that you'd always wanted to create a company yourself. You were like, okay, I'm going to go do this and I just need the idea. It was more you were butting heads at the place where you were, wanted to do more than you could. And that's what drove you to go, okay, I'm going to go off and I'm going to do this myself. Is that a fair assessment?
I've always had that entrepreneurship bug, as they call it. I've looked at many ideas before, but nothing was quite exciting. And then Apron just took off. Right timing, right moment. And stars aligned, essentially.
That's good. And I'm glad it happened, because obviously you've come in, made it success, and you're building and growing all the time. But one thing I want to take us back to is that you mentioned earlier about how you've put the customer at the center of, I guess, everything that you do at Apron. And I know lots of products say they do this, but to make a statement like that, I assume you must have some sort of mantra or some sort of focus. So how do you do that? Like, how do you make the customer the center?
Yeah, we just talk to them a lot. So when we just started Apron, before we started coding, we first talked to, if I remember correctly, over 200 businesses and accountants in the UK and Germany back then. And we even worked, before there was Apron app, we worked for a restaurant in London as their finance team, and we were managing their payment runs manually, doing all those mistakes that they do, because it's all kind of manual and disintegrated. And we were just learning how the workflow works and what are the pain points. We were double paying people. That particular restaurant had two entities. So we once paid suppliers from entity X out of bank account of entity Y. And then it took us a lot of time to fix that. And yeah, and then we continue talking to them all the time. Every time we have a new product in mind, we're always out there talking to customers, understanding their world and their needs. And then we design, we show them the first iteration, we go back, we prepare second iteration, we go back, get feedback. So there's no magic. Yeah, I just need to keep close to customers.
Sometimes that's what apps just forget to do. So it might sound simple, but if you do it effectively, then it makes a big difference. So have you got like a core group of accountants, bookkeepers and customers that are your kind of beta testers now?
Yeah. So we have with the payments product, like we've got hundreds and hundreds of accounting partners now who use the product daily. And with the capture product, we've had our alpha group. They have been testing the product and helping us with design since Q3. And then in January this year, they started using it, some of them with their clients. And then in March, we opened access to a wider group of beta customers. And that's dozens of accountants today who have access to Apron Capture and use it. Some of them with their clients already give us feedback, and we design the product together.
Yeah, no, it's an exciting and well talked about product. But the one thing that I always like to ask is that when you're building something, your favorite bit is not always the same as everyone else's, because it's maybe something really techy in the background. If you've got like a favorite bit that you've built that you think is actually quite niche and quite and stands out, but maybe people don't appreciate as much as you.
Good question. Yeah, so I've got two answers here. When it comes to our payments product, one thing that's really unique, and we spend a lot of time designing and implementing this, is what we call bank agnostic batch payments. So essentially what it means is that there's no wallet, there's no balance in Apron, and people can come to us with any bank that they have, whether it's HSBC, Barclays, Revolut, Starling, it doesn't matter. And they can batch pay their suppliers with their existing bank without the need to open a holding account, nothing in the middle. So they just come to Apron. Their bank account comes from Ledger, let's say Xero, QuickBooks. And then they can just select who they want to pay, click, 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 and everyone is paid. And that's super unique. There are a lot of people who try to do this through open banking, etc., but no one was able to nail it. And I believe we nailed it. So I'm really happy about that innovation in payments. It powers pretty much our whole payments product.
So just to clarify, just so I understand this, is it still using the open banking payment rails, but via a single pool?
Yeah. So what we do is we're in the flow of funds. So we're a full-fledged payments company. And then when people pay, let's say 100 invoices, 10K total, we take the 10K in one go to our accounts, and then we distribute to suppliers instantly when funds hit our account. Yeah, that's more or less how it works. And then when it comes to capture, there are a lot of innovations. I have two things to mention here, because those two things have simplified my life a lot as one of the clients of our accountants. So I'm the one submitting documents, and I'm the one who they chase for missing documents. So what I love most about Apron Capture is that I can submit via WhatsApp, and that's pretty unique too. And that's great, because I use WhatsApp daily. So all I need to do now is just take a photo and send it to WhatsApp group. That's it. WhatsApp channel. Super sleek. Works without internet. As easy as sharing photos as we say on our website. And then the second bit is we automated the need for accountants, bookkeepers to chase their clients for missing ducks. So before we started using Apron Capture, our accountant would send us a spreadsheet via email. So we have multiple spenders in the business. And that spreadsheet is like dozens of transactions long. Some of them are mine transactions. Some of them are someone else. So I need to take that spreadsheet, create a Slack channel, kind of Slack group with all those people who spend money and say, hey guys, could you please complete? We come all together in the spreadsheet, like start leaving comments one on top of the other and going to text, going to like email, you know, opening stuff, collecting docs, uploading it. And it was a messy process and it took me a great effort to complete. And now it's all automated and it sits inside Apron. So we pull through and reconcile transactions from Ledger, and all accountants need to do now is select those transactions, assign them to clients. I received a nice, simple email from our accountant, William, that says, William assigned 10 transactions to you. And then I log into Apron. Everything is filtered by me. I just go one by one, drop documents right inside, leave comments sometimes, documents lost, something like that. And that's it. And I'm biased, obviously, but this thing, the missing document workflow, has definitely changed my Friday evenings or Sunday evenings, depending on when I sit down to do those bookkeeping tasks. So, yeah, it's really been a game changer for me as a client. Again, yeah.
Well, I think going back to something earlier where Indy was saying about when she first met you and you were deep in product, I think you seem to come alive when we're talking about the details of products and the problems they solve. So it's definitely your passion, because founders have different passions. Some could be go to market and the customer side, but product definitely feels like that's yours. I've got probably one last question that I'd like to finish up on, which is probably not even that big, but integrations are critical now, plugging into different things, not just trying to solve everything, but by working as a community. So have you got other integrations that you're looking to build out in the future?
Yes. So finally, we started to look into it seriously. And we're now integrated with Ledger Place only, and it's Xero and QuickBooks only. And the reason is we're focusing on SMBs only, as we discussed. And we define as businesses 1 to 100 employees. And they are mostly like 95, 99% are on those two Ledger software. And still, we get a lot of requests for Sage, Preagent, sometimes NetSuite. We've heard for the first time today from one of larger accounting firms. And then same on the payroll side. It's like today, if you want to pay payroll on Apron, you would have to upload a file. And it's easy, but it's still friction. And we will start looking into it. It's not going to happen fast, but later this year, we will start adding more integrations. Stay tuned. We just realized at some point that we need to be present at where our customers already engage. So if they want to be able to pay bills from their Ledger, or if they want to be able to pay bills from their payroll software, we have to make it happen. It's good. It's good for customers. It's good customer UX. So yeah, we came to that realization and we'll start investing into it.
Definitely. So what would we expect first? Would it be the card payments or some integrations? Because it sounds like they're going to be about the same time. We'll just overlap them.
Yeah, some integrations will come first, I think, because we want to solidify what works good already, and then we'll move on to other things.
Cool. So big releases towards the end of 2024. But in the meantime, I guess you'll just be tinkering, updating. There's nothing big probably happening in the next 6 months.
Yeah, so it's mostly improvements to our existing products, and we'll be introducing sophisticated scheduling workflows. We'll be introducing balance as well into Apron app on the payment side, because the core of Apron is walletless, and we believe this is great for accountants, bookkeepers, it's great for clients too. But some use cases do require a wallet, and some clients do prefer to be able to top up a holding account and just release payments from that account. So we'll make it happen too. This will happen in Q2 this year. And on the capture side, yeah, we've got a lot of usability improvements coming. We've got a lot of new features coming too. So May is obviously the general admissions launch. We will open access to anyone who gets on our website. And then from May and starting summer, we will start adding new functionality. Like we will start looking at the sales side. We will start processing sales invoices. We will start processing bank statements, because it was a big surprise, but a lot of businesses don't have BankFeed connected. And some of them do not love it, do not like it at all, sharing their bank data. So they would just keep sending their PDFs.
I really don't get why someone that doesn't like sharing their bank data would then sign up with a payments app. It absolutely blows my mind. But
yeah,
personally, I would just go, no, we're not doing it. Just go to a bank feed. But I appreciate that maybe that's something you need to develop. But obviously people can, if they want to know more about Apron, they can look on the website, probably connect with you on LinkedIn. But if they want to meet you in person, which shows are you going to be at this year?
We'll be at all of them. So next one is Digital Accountants Show. Then we'll be at the AccountX and then ZeroCon. We're also on ICB Roadshow this year, same as last year. And yeah, most likely HCCA will have their roadshow too. So we'll go there. And then all the events at the North, AccountX North, we'll go there. We love meeting people. You've asked about like how do you build products for customers and stay close. So one of the hacks is people who build products and senior leaders in the company need to be at the stand. They need to be talking to customers. So you will always see our product managers, our senior leaders at the stand. And that's because the whole company needs to be close to customer. So we'll go to all of them and we'll meet as much people as possible. That's the plan.
That sounds really good and a really good mindset. Now, thank you, Bogdan, for coming on, being really open and honest and giving lots of insights into what your roadmap looks like. And hopefully you've enjoyed talking to us.
100%. Thanks for having me, Ryan. Really appreciate it.
Thanks. And that brings another podcast to an end. Thank you for listening. Hopefully you've got some great insights from our app news, our interview with Bogdan, and having the amazing Vipul from Advanced Track come on, our amazing sponsor and partner in this journey as the digital disruptors, of which this podcast is just one part of. If you haven't got involved with the other parts of what we do, please do check out our website, which is www.digital-disruptors.com. We have a weekly webinar series where we dive into tech products and specific updates and how to handle digital transformation. We do events at conferences, and we've got a systems advisory network as well. And we've got some other things to be coming out during the year. So do check out the website. Make sure you follow us and keep in touch. Now, as we do these pre-conference events, we have the Digital Accountancy Show coming up. And we have a big event for that. I'm going to hand you over to John, who knows a bit more about what we're doing.
Thanks very much, Ryan. Yeah, we have DigiGames. How creative is that name? Coming to you. And this is one of a series of pre-con events that we'll have. As Ryan said, it's running the night before Digital Accountancy Show. And we have picked a cracking venue, I think, because we're going to go to the Immersive Game Box in Shoreditch in London. It's in Shoreditch because it's the only place that could take the number of people that we wanted to get there. So we've got capacity for about 90, 100 people. We've already sold half the tickets. So if you're interested in coming along, get involved. But it is Monday night, April the 15th. Tickets are on sale on our Eventbrite page. So you can find it by going to www.digi-games.eventbrite.co.uk, or you can find it on all of our socials and things. But it'd be great to see you get along there. I also believe, just a little bit of insider knowledge, but I believe that Jason Statz, who is talking at Digital Accountancy Show, is going to be at the event. So if you're a Statz fanboy or girl, you can come along and get an autograph or a tattoo or whatever you like, and we'll facilitate all of that.
Who doesn't love Statz in this game? We love Statz, don't we? I've not even got my ticket yet, so please don't buy them before I've got the chance to buy mine. Otherwise, I'm going to be very miserable. But no, realistically, I'd love to have you all turn up. And please do come and say hi if you do, if we've not met before. And if you have not left a review on our podcast, please do so. We love hearing from you. We try and bring them up and talk about them in the pod, just because we love to hear your thoughts, comments, and what we should maybe do to improve it further.